Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Welcome, good people of the world, to episode 130 of Luke's English Podcast. This one is called A Cup of Tea with Sebastian Marx, and in this one, I invited my American friend Sebastian into the apartment to share a cup of tea and some lovely chocolate brownies while we discuss various things. Sebastian was born in New York, and he went to Boston University. He's a stand-up comedian in Paris, and he regularly performs both in English and in French. You can visit his website by going to my website, or just directly to his website, which is www.sebmarx.com. You can visit my website in order to find that website. It's just too confusing. It's like Inception for websites. I don't know. In this episode, as I said, I invited Sebastian. We talk about lots of things, and we answer various questions which were suggested by listeners to this podcast on the Facebook page. And we talk about diverse things, such as his experiences of growing up in New York, going to university in Boston, leaving America, how he learned a second language to a very high level, French in this case, his answers to questions about accents from the USA, the differences between America and Europe, and also more serious things like gun control, American military policy, and the amazing sport of disc golf, which is something I'd never heard of before. All of it is contained in this rather long episode of Luke's English Podcast, so I hope you enjoy listening to it, and it's about to start now. So, hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to announce that for the first time on Luke's English Podcast, I have an actual American man, an American person in front of me. I kidnapped him. I didn't really, but I kidnapped him and I've held him hostage, and I'm giving him cakes and tea. The cakes probably are okay, but is tea normal for you, Sebastian?
Yes, we are aware of that. We like drinking tea in the States.
You do? Yeah. Because, I mean, people say that tea is very, you know, a very English thing, don't they? But and coffee is like associated with America. But
is it really?
Well, yeah, you know,
I thought coffee was associated with Italy and France, and
It is too. Yeah, definitely, so, but certainly
Starbucks, I guess, gives that reputation all over the world that Americans drink watered down coffee.
Yeah, Americano.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they call it. Yeah. Do you call it Americano? You don't.
We call it coffee.
Okay.
if you order a coffee in the States, you get a big mug of coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that maybe in a diner?
Yeah, it could be in a diner.
Served by a sort of a slightly bored, overworked, middle-aged waitress?
Yes. Can be either Jewish or Greek, often.
Yeah.
Often, yeah.
And you have to tip, don't you?
You have to tip a lot.
Do you tip?
Do I tip when I'm in the States? I have to.
Yeah.
Because if you don't tip, the manager comes running at you.
Really?
If you don't tip at all, the manager can come out and ask you, well, was there a problem with the service? Mm-hmm. And you have to justify why you didn't give any tip. Because the waiters or waitresses over there, they make their living off of tips.
Right, okay.
So
it's essential.
It's essential.
Okay.
Which at the end of the day really helps the managers, because they just get away with not having to pay or pay very little their wait staff. Okay. And so the salary of the wait staff falls on the customer.
Okay. Right, so if there are any listeners out there who are going to America or maybe living in America right now, and if you don't tip, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Ashamed of yourself.
Because these waitresses and waiters.
Waiters, there are waiters as well in the United States.
They need your tips. So just remember that. Is that rule number one if you go to America?
Yes. Rule number one, yeah.
Obviously, it's rule number one is like, you know, get your passport.
Get your passport, get a visa. But I think the United States requires visas for pretty much every
really?
Country. Yeah.
It's difficult to get in.
They're a pain in the butt. They are real, when it comes to entering into that country, I don't know.
Okay.
It's not easy.
All right, but you actually manage, how are they about leaving the country?
Because love it when people leave the country.
Yeah, really?
They're thrilled about that. So, it's only about getting in.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, here I am with Sebastian Marx, who is, as you've obviously already worked out, is American.
Yes, I am.
So it's great because you're the first American person I've had on the podcast.
I feel honored.
You are. You should be honored. I think I might give you some sort of award for this.
Well, I'm already. I think brownies is a very good reward already. And tea.
Tea and
I'm more of a tea person, by the way. I'm more of a tea person.
Okay, so, you know, if there's a cliche about Americans drinking coffee all the time, it's not necessarily true.
No, they do in detective movies.
Yeah.
It's obligatory.
If you're a cop or a cop.
A cop.
Then you have to drink. Donuts and coffee.
Yeah.
Does that help, do you think? Does that help detectives to solve crimes?
Yeah. It helps them to solve crimes and not be able to run after the victim as he's running away or the Yeah. suspect.
That's why they have guns, though, isn't
it? Yeah, that's why. That's exactly why they have guns.
They don't need to run.
Yeah.
They can just shoot.
They can just shoot.
And they can eat as many donuts as they like.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a free country.
Yes.
They need to defend their freedom to eat donuts.
Okay, this is the beauty of well, we'll come back to the gun question later on, I think, Sebastian.
Yeah.
As I have, I expect, already said in the introduction, what we're going to do is just find out some stuff from Sebastian about America and America and the differences between America and Europe and Britain. Some things about accents as well. Other questions which I have received via Facebook. So some of you listening to this, you sent your questions to me on Facebook today. So I'm going to be asking Sebastian some of those questions later on. But first of all, let's just get to know you a little bit then, Sebastian. So so you're American, we've established that.
Yes.
You're definitely American.
Definitely.
Where exactly in the United States do you come from?
I grew up in the suburbs of New York City, about a half hour north of Manhattan.
Half an hour north of Manhattan.
Yes, in a place in a county called Westchester.
Westchester, okay,
yes.
Yeah. I've heard about Westchester.
Yes, and what did you hear about it?
Well, what I've heard about it, all I know about it is that there's a song called Westchester Lady, which you probably don't know.
No.
And it's by a jazz pianist called Bob James.
I don't know either.
Bob James did the music to the TV show Taxi.
I know Taxi.
Yeah, and Westchester Lady is a sort of a piece of jazz funk music.
And it's weird that I don't know him because I do listen to jazz and I do listen to jazz funk, but I don't know Bob James, you said?
Bob James.
Don't know Bob James.
You've got to check him out. It's a little bit cheesy.
Uh-huh.
But it's good, especially the rhythm section.
Made in the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all proper New York, I guess New York early 1970s or mid 1970s, genuine article jazz funk.
Mm-hmm.
It's classic
kind
stuff.
Kind of fusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah. Me too. Unfortunately, my girlfriend doesn't like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only, I've been very limited on how long, you know, like there's certain hours of the day that I'm allowed to play that music.
Okay. Headphones.
Yeah. Headphones is the way to go.
Yeah. Me too. I'm always rocking the headphones.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're from Westchester. What's West? That's very close to Manhattan, half an hour away.
Yeah, well, it's north of Manhattan. You have the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
which is part of New York City.
Yeah.
And then you have Westchester, which is the suburb. So it's, you know, it's a pretty cliche American suburb with lots of nice houses and a garden and the cliche white picket fence and stuff like that. So it's pretty close to that cliche.
Okay.
So it's a great place to grow up if you're a kid.
Yeah.
When you become a teenager, you want to kill yourself.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's boring. It's very boring.
Yeah. But you're so close to New York.
That's the thing. Yeah. Everything. Why it's boring is because everything is centered in New York.
Yeah.
You know. So. You kind of have to go into the city for most things. Well, not movies, of course. Movies you got everywhere, but Yeah, I mean, most cultural things you go into. So, I mean, I'm not going to complain. It was great.
Yeah.
Because I would, you know, every weekend with my parents growing up, we would go to wonderful museums in New York. And so, no, I feel very lucky.
Yeah.
Besides wanting to kill myself for a 5-year period.
Yeah.
No. It was a very, I feel very lucky to have grown up in the greater New York area.
Yeah. It would be amazing. I think probably, as you said, wanting to kill yourself is a kind of a teenage thing, perhaps.
I think anywhere. I think it's a universal teenage thing.
Yeah.
Even if you live in the heart of New York or the heart of many places or the head of many places, the left foot of many places.
Yes. Because New York is not the capital. It's, as you say, it's like the left foot. So Washington is the right foot.
Oh, no. New York is definitely the heart. New York is... but I was saying like someone who might want to kill themselves if they're in Nebraska, which would be the equivalent of the left foot.
Okay.
But no, New York is not the capital of the United States. Washington, D.C. is the capital of the United States. But New York feels like the capital of something. I don't know what, but it's
maybe one of the cultural capitals, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely the cultural and economic capital of the States.
With Wall Street and
exactly.
so on. Exactly. Yeah. So you grew up in New York,
mm-hmm.
but I understand that you have lived in Boston.
Yes, I went to school in Boston. I went to college, what they call college in the States, which is university.
Wait, you went to Harvard?
Oh, no, unfortunately not, or fortunately not. I went to Boston University, which is actually right across the river, the Charles River, from MIT and Harvard, which is actually Harvard and MIT are technically in the city of Cambridge, which is, there's a Cambridge in Massachusetts as well.
It's confusing.
Yeah, I know.
Because Cambridge, obviously Cambridge in England is a very famous place for its university there.
Yeah.
But there's also another Cambridge in America.
Which is famous for its universities.
Okay.
But there isn't a university called Cambridge University in the United States.
Thank goodness for that. That would be really confusing.
Really confusing.
All right.
So the city of Boston has pretty much, I mean, there are two kind of halves. One is Boston proper. The other is Cambridge, which is right across the river,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much the same city. Technically another city, but in Cambridge it's a little bit more residential than Boston is. There is Harvard and there is MIT is over there as well.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just eating a strawberry. My girlfriend, because she's really nice and lovely, she provided us with not only homemade kind of brownie cakes.
Delicious. What nut is in this?
There's almonds.
Mm.
So these brownie cakes are obviously just like brownies, but with almonds inside them. And also we have a plate of strawberries because it's a nice warm day here. And so strawberries can be the perfect snack.
Wonderful snack.
Nice fresh strawberries.
To counterbalance this brownie.
Yeah, the unhealthiness of a brownie is balanced by the healthiness and sweetness and lightness of a strawberry.
Yeah.
And we also, of course, have cups of tea.
Green tea.
Yeah, and as I've said before on the podcast, it's obviously very rude to speak with your mouth full, but we like to break the rules here at Luke's English Podcast.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. So that includes speaking with your mouth full, and it also includes slurping your tea. Do you slurp your tea?
I do.
Okay.
I'm a fan of slurping. Can I slurp?
Yeah, go ahead.
Should we?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Mmm. Obviously, it's very rude to slurp your tea, and we're only doing it...
Even in the United States.
Yeah? Okay. Pierre, last time we started talking about slurping tea, and he mentioned Iran for some reason. I don't know why. He seemed to think that in Iran people did slurp their tea, and it was polite.
It was polite, okay.
He's wrong. I did get... I got an email saying that, no, in Iran it's very rude if you slurp your tea, so there we go. Anyway, we've talked enough about slurping tea. So, grew up in New York, university in Boston, but not Harvard.
Not Harvard. It's a university called Boston University, which is actually very big. It's a very big university.
What did you study?
I studied film.
Oh, really?
Well, I went to the College of Communications, then I majored in film, and I minored in history.
Film and a bit of history as
yes.
well.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so did you do, like, a dissertation or
I did a final film,
Sorry, you majored in making films or studying films?
Both,
yeah.
But making films as well, and that was my final dissertation, project, let's say, was a final film. And so right after I left university, I had lots of knowledge of how to be a waiter. It was it helped a lot for that.
Because it doesn't necessarily prepare you for...
For much else. So and even the world of filmmaking, it's... Well, because it's a creative, it's an artistic field, so there's only so much you can learn. But
yeah. It sounds a lot like my degree.
Which is?
Except that I didn't learn actually how to do anything. I just learned how to read about things and, I did a critical, cultural theoretical degree. Huh. It sounds much more complicated than it actually is.
Yeah.
I did media and cultural studies in Liverpool.
Yeah.
In the north of England, famous, of course, for the Beatles and football, and that's it. it's a fantastic place, of course. I did media and cultural studies. We studied lots of movies. I wrote long essays about Clint Eastwood and Batman.
Yeah.
And
the modern hero or what?
The sort of postmodern detective.
Ah. Kind of Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry. Gotcha. I'm a big fan of Clint Eastwood films.
Yeah.
So you studied film. I see. So are you a filmmaker now?
I am working on a web series right now. But I don't consider myself so much a filmmaker because I'm not really doing that right now. I'm focusing much more on stage stuff, performances and stuff like that.
Okay. In fact, that brings us quite neatly to the fact that, now here in France, in Paris, Sebastian is a stand-up comedy performer.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of one of the main comedy performers in English here in Paris.
Yeah, I started a night of English stand-up comedy. When there wasn't anything pretty much going on in English stand-up comedy in France.
Was it difficult?
It was very difficult. Both sides of the stage, if I can say, meaning finding the audience and finding the comics.
Yeah.
So the first couple of times when I did the show, which was the idea was to have what they call a showcase, meaning several different comedians. Because I didn't have anybody that I knew who was able to be funny in English, I was pretty much doing my one-man show. I mean, that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah.
And then slowly started to have... started with French comics who were interested in performing in English.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, I got some English, native English-speaking comics like you performing more and more. So it took a while because, as I said, it's been, almost 3 years now.
The scene is developing.
It's developing, and it's been developing mostly within the last year.
Okay. Well, it's good. It's very promising. Briefly, let's just talk about the shows that you do.
Yeah.
Sebastian is responsible for three shows here in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have your one-man show.
Yeah, called A New Yorker in Paris.
A New Yorker in Paris. It's very funny. And it's full of interesting cultural points, it's fantastic. Also, you do that show in French.
Yeah, I did it up until last Tuesday. I decided to take a little break on my French show and to put it aside to kind of, because I've had many projects, so I've kind of said, okay, I need to take a break on some things to focus more creatively on other ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was performing in French, my full one-man show as well.
Wow, so you must speak very good French.
Decent enough. Yeah. I speak French well enough to be funny in it, but I'm not sure if they're laughing in where they're supposed to laugh or where the joke is, or if they're laughing at my accent.
You mean you're not sure if they're laughing with you or if they're laughing at
me?
At
exactly.
You.
Yeah. Well, most of the time they're laughing with me,
but
it's true that... being funny in a foreign language is hard, is very hard.
Yeah, because I imagine that being funny is like what you achieve at the very end. Like it's the last thing you're able to do.
Exactly.
You know, first of all, you're just able to order a coffee and then it gets a bit more complicated. You can do a presentation or get involved in a meeting. And then at the absolute peak, you are able to do a one-man show for an hour in front of an audience of French people in French.
Yeah.
In this case, it's French, but it could equally be in English if English is not your first language.
So, but yeah, it's the one of the last things, because not only you need to speak the language very well, and you need to be comfortable in the language that you can kind of improvise a little bit.
Mm.
Also, you need to have the cultural references, the slang words. You know, there's a lot in humor.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have all that, it's hard. And so it's still hard. You know, I even though I've had some success with it, and you know, I've done my French bits on French television.
Yeah.
It's still, I definitely feel I'm not where I would like to be because of the language barrier.
I think it's very difficult to get to the sort of bilingual stage if you didn't start when you were a kid.
Yeah, if you didn't grow up with it, I think it's very difficult. Yeah.
But do you have any tips for learning a second language?
I think immersing yourself.
Yeah.
Kind of in the language. I mean, of course, if you can live in the country where they speak the language, of course, that's ideal.
Yeah.
That's the best way, because more or less, unless you're kind of in a relationship with someone who speaks your native tongue, you're forced to speak the language.
That's interesting. Yeah.
If you're working, for example, you know, you have to understand what the person is saying and you have to respond.
Mm.
So immersing yourself is the best way.
Essentially, I think what this means is that we have to push ourselves, or we have to throw ourselves into situations where we will struggle to survive, as it were, and then in that struggling, that's where the learning takes place. So we need to be challenged, don't we?
Forced, almost. I mean, I don't know if this is a personal thing, because I know that, like, if I have the escape route where I know that the person speaks English and I'm frustrated, I'm going to go back to speaking English. But if I know that the person in front of me doesn't understand English, which was the case, I was forced to express myself in French, whether it be, even if it was awkward.
Yeah.
But after a while, by the end of the day, there was 8 hours of the day where I was only communicating in this other language. So unfortunately, I had to force myself and you know, kind of put myself in a corner where I could only survive by speaking that language. So
I think it's a lot of it is about comfort zone.
Yeah.
So if you're in your comfort zone, if you're comfortable, you know, the learning isn't really going to happen. You'll be comfortable, it'll be very nice, but you're not necessarily going to really learn. So we need to try and push ourselves out of our comfort zones in order to give ourselves a chance to really let learning happen. So when it comes to, like, learning English, people listening to this, just keep that in mind, I suppose. Like when you're watching a DVD in English, comfort zone, have you got your subtitles on? Maybe turn them off.
Yeah.
Because
Or watch with English subtitles.
Yeah. Well, people say that. Yeah, that I think that's definitely a good idea. Watch an English language film with English language subtitles. But then when you get so used to that, the next step is to switch off the subtitles.
Yeah. And see how much. But it's amazing how much more your ears start to open once you don't have that crutch.
Yeah.
Of the subtitles.
Yeah.
And I realized that in French, when you put yourself in a situation, it can be a passive situation where you're watching a film, but you're forced to follow the story, it's amazing how much you'll be surprised that you understand.
Yeah.
You'll surprise yourself, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Once your ears adapt.
Yeah. Well, I have to take on that advice as well, because now I'm learning a second language. You know, it's difficult. It's early days.
But it's a very difficult language.
French.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I mean, you know, it's been 9 years now that I'm here. And Nine years, and I still make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
And I still have a very strong... And it's very frustrating, because I can say 2 words and a French person knows already that I'm not French.
Mm.
Okay. Bonjour. They're like, hi, you know.
Yeah. Mm. I find that when I start speaking French to people, they just start speaking English to me. Because they're like, oh, clearly you can't speak our language.
Yeah.
I'll speak English to you. And maybe they want to practice their English with me. They're like, ah, an English person. Yeah. Let me speak English to him.
But I can't help but sometimes get offended. Well, I didn't at first, but now after 9 years, I'm like, oh, you know, I do speak French.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, so you're like, just speak French to me, for God's sake.
Yeah. Especially also because their English is not necessarily spectacular either, you know, but they want to speak English.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah. Maybe they would like a little mini English lesson. okay, so yeah, you've been living in Paris for 9 years.
Yeah.
So you're an American, you're a New Yorker in Paris. That's the name of your show.
Yeah.
So what brought you here to Paris then? What brought you here?
Well, actually, I wasn't in Paris. I didn't live in Paris at first. Mm-hmm. I was in the south of France for a while.
Yeah.
And now it's been about 4 years that I've been in Paris. And so I came up to Paris. I was in Toulouse for a while.
Down
southwest, the southwest of France. Mm-hmm. I came up to Paris to kind of... well, France is very centered in Paris.
Everything's based in Paris.
Yeah, lots of the jobs are here. Lots of the kind of the entertainment industry is here. It's very centered.
Mm-hmm.
So, being someone who majored in film and all that stuff, I realized that Paris is kind of the future, and I wanted to start performing again because I did perform comedy when I was in New York and Boston, and I kind of missed the stage.
Yeah. So, but why did you leave America? Why did you leave your home country?
My home country. Well, because I was with a French girl.
Ah, yeah. Well, love.
Well, there we go. Okay. And so, but all, you know, that was part of it. But I also, you know, I had recently graduated from college and I wanted to travel mm-hmm. as well. So there were different reasons.
Yeah.
Love being one of them. Also adventure, wanting to, you know, I had no idea how long I would stay. Yeah. I didn't know. And so, you know. Here I am 9 years later. Went by pretty quickly.
Yeah, the time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
okay, so what's it like being an American in France? How is it being an American in France generally?
Generally, it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, the French and Americans have a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. You love them and they hate you?
Both mutually, we both love and hate.
Yes.
Each other. Because for different reasons. We get very pissed off about each other, you know, and get annoyed by each other.
Yeah. Can you tell us some of those things? Like, what do the Americans get annoyed with the French about?
The fact that they are... Well, it's funny because both have the impression that the other's arrogant.
Right.
So the Americans have the impression that the French are arrogant, that the French are pretentious and rude. Yeah. So these are the big clichés. And that the French kind of could try to counteract the Americans often, criticize.
Yeah.
And which on the other hand, lots of Americans are here because of that, because also lots of American citizens are very critical of the American government as well. And so coming to France, there's this kind of haven of people who are not necessarily gung-ho for everything that America stands for can put the American way of life and government into question. You know, necessarily being against, but just asking more questions.
So I tend to find that Americans who have come here to France to live tend to be more open-minded, perhaps, or they have more perspective on America than...
Well, I think, I don't know if it's specifically to France. I think just leaving the United States automatically gives you more perspective. You know, it's very easy living in the United States to feel that the United States is the world.
Yeah.
Because it is a microcosm of the world. There are people from all over the world in the United States more than in any other country in mm-hmm. the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very big country, and you kind of have everything represented there.
You've got like two sides.
You got two sides.
You've
got
a middle.
Ocean
on both sides.
And you got all different landscapes. And as I said, all different countries are represented there. And so, you know, and there's a television that's very, you know, American television is very identifiable. And so it's very easy to forget that there's a world outside.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether you come to France or any other country, I think right away you get another perspective.
Yeah.
And it helps you give us perspective on the United States.
Yeah.
So I think naturally someone who lives abroad has that perspective that someone living in the United States who never traveled will probably not have.
That's one of the big criticisms that people have of America, is that they don't know anything about the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But I guess when you leave, then you get a lot more perspective on things.
The thing about the States is it's everything. It's a country of extremes. You have the most ignorant people as you can have the most cultured people.
Mm.
You know, and New York is totally different from Kansas. You know, it's yeah. You've got everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Before you came to Europe, what did you expect Europe as a whole to be like? Have you visited many other countries in Europe?
I had been before coming to France. I had been to Spain,
yeah.
And England and Portugal.
Okay. And since have you traveled around?
Yeah. Since now it's been 9 years. I've been in France. Yeah. Now I've been to Italy, Germany. Belgium, the Netherlands, but still mostly Western Europe.
Been to the UK?
Not since I've been to France.
You haven't been to the UK?
Not since I went to London. So that's not true. No, I have been to the UK. I went actually 2 summers ago. We actually drove across the UK to go to Ireland.
All right, so you were just passing through?
Just passing through. I saw Stonehenge for 10 minutes.
It's not very... Yeah.
Disappointed.
Well, you mean you stopped and you looked at it?
I looked at it.
On foot?
Yeah. There's a gate. There's like this kind of fence around.
Yeah.
So I didn't go because I think you have to pay.
You have to pay to get in. And
I didn't pay. I saw it from the outside and that was fine.
To be honest, Stonehenge is a bit disappointing, but it's not because of the site. Or it's not because of the monument itself. It's not a monument. I mean, it's not because of the
structure,
the thing itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't really know what it is.
No, we don't.
In fact, it's not the stones that are disappointing. It's just the way that the location is presented. In fact, because it's a deeply significant site in terms of ancient history of the area, and what you have now is a motorway,
a road
runs right past it, and so that doesn't help.
I didn't expect it there. It could have just been a gas station, but no, it was a Stonehenge.
Yeah, yeah. It should. I think originally Stonehenge was at the end of a long path, and it was kind of at the top of a small hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to get to Stonehenge, you would have to walk quite a long way across a lot of open land. With a rising kind of gradient,
yeah.
So you'd be sort of walking uphill,
yeah.
And you would see Stonehenge in the distance.
Okay.
And then when you get to Stonehenge, this is sort of 5,000 years ago, when you got to Stonehenge, it was much, much more impressive because of the surrounding area,
yeah.
And the context. Now, it's not the same because there's this big motorway that goes right past it, so unfortunately it's spoiled.
It's true that if I had to get to Stonehenge by walking a little bit, it definitely would have had a different effect.
Yeah, I don't know if that's just because you would be relieved
that
you finally
got there.
Oh, God, finally here. Not that it's that impressive. It's just like, oh, we don't have to walk anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. I would love to hear what you think about other countries. I mean, because we can't just talk about France. I have listeners from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, on Facebook, some of them have sent me questions. So the first question I have is from Jairo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure where Jairo is from, actually. But what he said is, if you had the chance to go back in time for 24 hours, so just for one day, where and when would you go? So you've got a time machine. You can use it for 24 hours. Where are you going to go? When are you going to go to?
I think ancient Greece.
Yes?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I think they really had another way of thinking. I think it would be really interesting to know what humans were like before the dawn of our modern religions. I think it would be very... I think they must have thought very differently. And I think it would be very interesting to spend 24 hours and would, I think, really open up my mind to seeing how humans were Because I think we chose a different path since then, and I think it would be interesting to see really how they thought. And
yeah, when I imagine ancient Greece, I imagine sort of guys sort of lounging around with tablets.
Yes.
You know, but it's not like sort of tablet computers like we have now.
No.
They had the original tablets.
The original, yeah.
Just stone tablets.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that any time you wanted to write something down, you had to engrave
Chisel,
it?
Chisel, yeah. And especially with the, well, later with the numbers, with the Rome. Yeah, another, I mean, either ancient Greece or ancient Rome. But yeah, that with the numbers and the Roman numerals, how if you wanted to, you know, represent the 1943, you would have to have like many characters.
Yeah. Okay, you'd have to learn a new alphabet.
Yeah, pretty much a new alphabet. Yeah.
Okay, right. So you go to ancient Greece, right?
Yes.
Right. Awesome. Brilliant. All right. So, the next question is from Christopher,
mm-hmm.
and Christopher says, "What accent do you prefer, Sebastian? Do you prefer the British accent, an American accent, or an accent from another country? So what's your favourite accent?"
Cool. I don't know if I have a favourite accent. I mean, there are accents I find funny,
mm-hmm.
that for comedic potential as a comedian works very well. I think a German speaking English for some reason is very funny. I don't know if it's thanks to Mel Brooks' films,
yeah.
Or what, but there's something funny I think about it, a German speaking English.
Really? Because I've got a lot of Germans who are listening to this and they're thinking, "Oh, is my English funny?" They might be worried.
Offended. I just offended them all.
You just offended the whole nation of Germany.
Of Germany. I like the Indian accent when the Indians speak English. I find it's I don't know, there's a ring to it that I appreciate.
Going back to the German thing again,
yeah. I have to make up for it now.
Yeah uh-huh. You do, but I think there is I think the thing about German accent that makes it funny is as you said, like some movies,
yeah.
and stuff, and some comedy movies,
yeah.
have presented some Germans as sort of comedy characters,
yeah.
with the voice and so on. Okay, and you find Indian accent to be pleasant,
yes,
and charming.
I mean, I love the British accent as well.
Well, of course.
Irish accent. I feel the Irish can say anything, and it's adorable. It's they can curse. They can say terrible news, but it's charming.
Hiroshi from Japan,
mm-hmm.
is a regular contributor to the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Hiroshi says he's got rather a serious question for you, mm-hmm. Sebastian. He said, "What do you think about the ban the gun movement in America?" And he adds, "I can't believe they're allowed to keep the gun." I can't believe they're allowed to keep guns.
Guns, yeah.
I'm strongly against it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
Why don't they ban guns with a strong decision like the decision to begin a war? Whoa, it's a controversial question from Hiroshi.
Yes. Well, I mean, I agree with him, generally speaking, that there should definitely be more gun control in the United States. Why? I don't know. This is a very complicated question. I don't know if we really know why Americans love guns. But, you know, we do love guns. I mean, speaking very generally of the American people, I think it was, well, it's written in the Constitution that it's a right. It's one of the first bills of the Constitution. I don't know which number.
I don't know either.
I should know this, but didn't memorize the whole Constitution.
Uh-huh.
So I think because it's like top five, they think that it's necessary to hold on to, which of course is a big mistake in the sense that guns, when the Constitution was written, was a very different beast. You know, a gun, you had to shoot one bullet. It took you 5 minutes to clean out your...
They didn't have AK-47s
or
M-16s back in those days.
Yeah, so definitely a different kind of thing they were dealing with 230 years ago.
Mm.
Why? I think it's fear. I really think it's fear. I think that there is a big fear that it's a vicious circle in the sense it's a vicious circle of fear in the sense that you know that someone on the street might have a gun. So in order to defend yourself, the only way is to have a gun. Mm. So you have a gun, and then that person, of course, is afraid that you might have a gun. And so everyone winds up having a gun. Yeah. Lots of people have guns in their house because they're worried that someone will rob their house at gunpoint.
Yeah. It's terrible. It means that guns just multiply.
Exactly.
All it takes is for like a certain number of people to have guns for everyone else to feel that they should have guns.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that it goes a little deeper than that as well. And when you start talking about gun control, people feel it's like anti-American to ban the gun. So maybe that is the Constitution. But
that's linked with the Constitution, because we have this association that, because the Constitution defines America, this is kind of the idea, so that if you kind of get rid of one of the fundamental aspects of the American Constitution, it is un-American.
Yeah.
But it, in my opinion, it is also very much American and necessarily American to put these things in question.
Yeah.
The American way of life, in my opinion, the positive aspect is to constantly be putting yourself in question, which I think the American people and government don't do enough.
Yeah. Well, I hope that there is more gun control. Just as a final point, I think, as you said about it being American, it seems that it's central, somehow it's connected to some core American values.
Yeah.
Like one of those being freedom or liberty.
Definitely.
And I think that, to an extent, some people in the States value the right or the right to have a gun as somehow connected to the ability to be free.
Yeah.
And that the having the right to bear arms is more valuable than the fact that some people will die from shootings.
We're very much afraid of the government in the United States.
You don't like the idea of the government having government, control over you.
And telling somebody, an individual, what to do. So that this is a general, you know, I'm talking very general. As I said, the United States is a very big place with 300 million people. So, it's very hard to categorize a whole country. But I'm talking about the people who, as you said, hold on to their rights. And yes, they consider it a right. And if the government would say, no, you can't carry a gun, they would take it as an infringement on their freedom. Yeah. And because it was established a long time ago, and the United States was it's a big country that had pioneers coming in, and they needed to explore the land, and they needed their gun, and so they needed to hold on to it. So it's changed a lot, as I said. So
I think it may be, to be honest, I think it may be the British. I think it's our fault. Sorry. I think it's our fault because obviously in America there was the War of Independence and you had to fight against the kind of colonials, the Brits. You had a war against the British. So maybe adding into the Constitution that all Americans were allowed to have guns and that they should be allowed to have guns was a protection against the British. Because we had guns and we were fighting against you. So you said, right, American people, you can have guns. In fact, you should, because you need to protect yourselves against the British. So it's our fault.
Yeah. But it's become... Well, it's always the British fault. Let's get that clear. It's always the British.
We're responsible for everything.
Yeah, but now it's been replaced with, but it's the same idea, it's the same concept. Now it's replaced by criminals, you know, the people, the criminals out there who are going to attack me, I need to defend. So it comes back to this idea of fear that I need to defend myself and that no one will do it for me.
Yeah.
So there is this mistrust of the government, of the police won't do it. And that's also another thing. The citizens say, well, if the cops have guns, that's not fair. I should have a gun as well. And so the cops have guns because the criminals have guns. And so everyone winds up having a gun.
Well, Hiroshi, I hope that answers your question. I think it's clear that, not all... It's a very complex issue. We know that much. And you can see how it's all related to national identity. And that actually is very important, you know, in how people define their lives. So it's very complicated. But, why don't they ban guns with a sort of strong decision? And he says that Americans took a very strong decision to go to war. So that's a very sort of decisive thing, that America sometimes decides to go to war, for example, in Iraq or in Afghanistan. That leads us on to another question here. Sorry to put this to you, Sebastian, because today you're having to justify everything that your country has done
for the last 50 years.
So you're, as an American, you have to explain why America does these things.
Well, I want to say one thing that unfortunately, with all these gun massacres recently in schools and all that, I feel, and I'm, you know, hopefully that there's a tendency that the United States will wake up and really start to put a restriction on guns when we see how rampant the guns are all over the place.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, again, very complicated thing. We could talk about that.
So war.
But the next one is like war, isn't it? So we've done guns. Let's move on to war. So what do you think about sort of the American military missions in Iraq and Afghanistan? That's a question from Yarrick. So he asks, what do you think about U.S. military missions in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, I'm not very well informed enough, I think, to talk about this. I mean, you know, I'm you know, very much against war in general. I'm not that for Americans getting involved in such places, especially there's so much irony in the fact that the countries that America is invading are the same countries that they supplied guns to 30 years ago.
Well, Bill Hicks, who's a great stand-up comedian who unfortunately is not with us anymore, he made lots of very funny jokes about it. Like one of them was like, when American sort of politicians appear on the news and they say Iraq, you know, the Iraqi army, this is from the original Gulf War, 1991. The Iraqi army, they got terrible weapons. And how do you know that? Well, we checked the receipt, so these are weapons that the America actually originally sold to the Iraqi army. And then they fight against the Iraqi army with even better weapons than them. So they know exactly what they've got because
And then afterwards, as far as specific interactions with Iraqi and Afghanistan, I don't know enough of details. I think that it's very hard to know what's going on, really.
Okay.
I mistrust the American news.
Yeah.
And so in what aspect am I against it? It's really hard to know. But I mean, I have to say also that there's this tendency that I agree in some regards that there needs to be a democratic system that's put in place that in some way I agree with. I don't necessarily agree with the methods that the American government is doing, but you know, it's true that I agree that there should be some democracy in these countries.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Thanks for your questions about this. We're not necessarily the people,
the most informed,
the people to finally answer these very complicated ones. But still, it's interesting to see the opinion of an American person. Yarrick also asks you, do you know any foreign languages? I suppose this is because we assume that Americans don't know foreign languages, but you're slightly different because you've been in France for a while.
Yeah, I am a weird case, even though I am a real American because I was born and raised there. My parents are from Argentina, so I speak a bit of Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with Spanish in the household, and now, of course, I speak French because it's been a while that I'm here. And, well, yeah, it is atypical. It's not necessarily not many Americans speak foreign languages, but more and more, I would say, especially because there's such a heavy immigration and a very, very big Latino population in now most major cities in the United States. More and more Spanish is being heard on the street everywhere, in especially major cities. And so more and more people are opening up to foreign languages. Yeah.
Can I ask you quickly about Argentina?
Yep.
So both your parents come from Argentina.
Yes.
Did they move? Go on.
They were born and raised there, both of them. They met there. They married there. My brother was born there, and then they moved to the United States, and I was born in the United States.
Okay.
Did I The future question.
It did. I see. Have you been to Argentina yourself?
Yes, several times. I know my parents are from Buenos Aires, and so I know Buenos Aires quite well. Mm-hmm. I don't really know that much else of the country, unfortunately. I've been around a bit, but I haven't been. I've been to like Iguazu, which is the waterfalls in between Argentina and Brazil. Gorgeous.
Really?
Gorgeous place. But I haven't been to many places I still need to visit in Argentina. It's a very big country.
Yeah. So can you just tell us one thing that you remember about your time in Argentina? Did you eat like a lot of steak?
Lots of steak. Very good steak. Very good beef.
Apparently it's the best beef steak you can get in the world.
Yeah, it's very good. I don't know, best. I mean, France is very good beef, the States as well. I mean, it's hard to say because it also depends a lot how it's prepared. But yeah, the quality of the beef is true. It's very good. Mm. And it's very much a part of their diet everywhere. It's like normal. It's like every day you can eat beef, and they don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
And it's a very nice city. Buenos Aires is it's a very nice city. It's a very European influenced city.
Yeah.
Lots of French architecture that you can find, like aspects that kind of remind you of Paris but an older Paris. But
really nice people as well. I mean, the people I've met from Argentina have always been like really friendly and
warm.
Interesting and very warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to go one day. Maybe when I finally do my round the world adventure. Luke's round the world adventure. I'll make it podcast.
And do podcasts from each country.
It would be brilliant. I'd love to do that. Okay, so let's see. Atsushi Yoshida, mm-hmm. who is from Japan, would like to know what. He says, I want him to talk about American regional accents.
Okay.
So I talk about British regional accents quite a lot, and I love accents. I'm really into it. Sometimes I talk about American accents, but I don't know which part of the country my American accent comes from.
Okay.
So if I kind of, you know, if I just sort of like start speaking with a generic American voice, I don't know where he comes from. I mean, okay. So first question. How many different regional accents are there in the USA?
You can't number them like that. I mean, it gets very, very specific. You know, even in New York, there's several accents. So there's there's an Italian-American New York accent.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, come on. What's the matter with you?
Exactly.
You want to get some cannoli?
Exactly. Yeah. Very good. So which would be different from a typical New York accent, which is kind of like the Woody Allen. New York. They will kind of put an emphasis on the K, like New York, or water. And some people say that I have a slight New York Jew accent. I am Jewish. So that's one. And so I don't hear it, but sometimes people do say that there is, like, it's kind of, you might hear it with the T, where we can kind of replace the T with a D, like a clear example with water.
Water.
Water. Yeah.
So that's interesting, because whenever I do I always use water as an example, and I always say water.
Yeah.
Now you're saying water.
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 Okay. Water. 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 Because I emphasize the "er" sound a bit too much.
Can you're saying it when you're doing an American accent.
Yeah. Can you say
that's a New York accent. That's also my accent. Meaning, yours I think is more of a Middle America.
Yeah.
Accent.
Okay, so can you say, can I get a glass of water, please?
Can I get a glass of water, please?
Can I get a glass of water, please? So I think mine is more more exaggerated or something.
Yeah, but not that much. It's pretty straight on. I mean, there are definitely Americans who speak like that. So it's.
Does that have any particular regional?
No, I can't. I mean, you'd have to speak more for me to try to place it. But
so I guess I'm sitting here with Sebastian Marx, and he's a comic. He's very funny, and we've just been drinking some. So now that's that. We've just been drinking. It's kind of really middle American.
Yeah, but no, I mean it's hard to place. I would say a middle America, but it could be someone from New York as well, or any city. I think it's starting to blend more and more. I mean, I think with mass communications, all Americans are watching the same television shows, are being influenced by, same news broadcasters. Which, you know, apparently, this is what I heard, I don't know if it's true, no matter in which country or language, apparently the newscasters are supposed to have the most neutral accent, which I think is not the case in the BBC, because as they speak weird, as sketch so clearly says. But it seems like they, at least an American newscaster kind of has to have a relatively neutral accent.
Okay. For me, listeners to the podcast will know that part of my comedy routine involves speaking like a newsreader who, for some reason, speaks like this. That's a bit exaggerated, but
it's true.
It is. I was watching the Margaret Thatcher's funeral today,
and
they were doing it. They were like the coffin there being lifted by members of the SAS, the Royal Marines, and the Gurkha rifle infantry. You know, it's just like, why are you speaking like that?
Yeah, come on.
That's a different question, though, about the way newsreaders speak. But, okay, can I...
Are there American regions you want?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a southern accent, which is...
Right, kind of. Hey, you ain't from around here, are you?
Yeah.
We don't take too kindly to strangers around here.
Yeah, so it can be very, you know, what we call rednecky, kind of like the cliche that you did. But then it could also be very sweet. Can be, and I have to say that there's something very seductive of French, I was about to say, a southern girl. When a girl has a southern accent, it can be very charming as well.
What does a girl got to do to get a nice cold drink around here? You know, it's kind of got a draw.
Yeah, that
kind of. It's kind of like this. And it
can be also very nice.
Well, I got to get myself back home now. It sure is getting late.
Exactly.
I don't know what that accent is.
No, that was great. That was like a scene from a 1950s movie with James Dean or something.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about Texan accent.
Yeah.
So what is that? Because I have this kind of cowboy voice that I like to play around with, which is like that sort of...
John Wayne-y.
I know, it's more of a kind of gritty sort of 1970s character from like the outlaw Josie Wales.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I'm prouder than a game rooster to have rid with you, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm hungry and tired as a Missouri heel hound, you know? Like, what is that?
What is that?
I
can't take responsibility for this. No, I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes for me, as a New Yorker, it's hard to tell the difference between a Southern accent and a Texan accent.
Yeah.
You know, well, they're both in the South. Okay. But, like, you know, I'm sure that there's a difference between someone from Georgia and someone from Texas.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to necessarily. Yeah, perhaps if I heard, I'll be able. Oh, that's Texas. But I wouldn't be able to reproduce it. Okay. But you sounded like you're doing a pretty good job.
I think I'm doing a character rather than an accent.
But it's definitely a character of the cliche of that accent.
He's a gold prospector, basically.
Okay. Well, that could be more West. Yeah. Like that can be even more, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. Kind of, or it's also a question of what century we're talking about.
It is. Yeah.
Another accent, which I don't know if you want to continue with accent, but that's pretty clear is a Boston accent, being that someone who lived in Boston, which is the accent that you can really hear with John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. People of I can't do it.
They don't pronounce the main thing is the R. They don't pronounce the R. The cliche, the key phrase that we always say to make fun of the Boston accent is "Park the car and have it yard."
Park the car and have it yard.
Park the car and have it
yard. Park the car in Harvard yard.
Yeah.
Park the car and have it yard.
A wicked pizza. So that's the cliche. That's a typical Boston accent. So ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yeah.
And there's kind of like rhythm to it. So that's very typical.
If you want to hear what the Boston accent really sounds like, then you could probably watch The Departed or The Departed.
Which I haven't seen, but yeah, I heard
it's
it.
Great. It's a really good film. Yeah. But there, it's set in Boston.
Yeah.
All the characters are like gritty Boston, you know, locals, and so they all speak with a strong Boston accent. It's sort of Irish influenced.
Yeah, very, very heavy. Well, there was a huge, huge Irish immigration to Boston. Yeah. Also, if you want to hear a typical Boston accent, which is kind of making fun, which is a character based on the Kennedys, is in The Simpsons, Mayor Quimby.
Yeah.
If you hear the American version of The Simpsons, Mayor Quimby has a typical Boston accent.
Okay, the mayor,
right? And of course, he's a corrupt mayor. You know, it's all the cliches of a politician.
Yeah.
And he has the cliche Boston accent.
Because he's basically John F. Kennedy.
Yes, yeah, pretty much. Or Ted Kennedy, who was a governor of Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's quite funny.
There's a huge Kennedy family. And
yeah. It's interesting the way you say the word mayor, because I say mayor, which is mayor, that's it.
And
you say
mayor. Yeah.
Kind of, okay. Yeah. Mayor.
You say it almost like the French do, mayor.
Mayor, except without the h at the end.
Yeah.
Mayor. I think the way that the British, or the way I say it, sounds a bit ridiculous. I sound like a sheep.
Mayor.
Mayor. The mayor of London. What? Did you just become a sheep in the beginning of that sentence? The mayor of London. What? You know, moo. Is that a word as well? Moo. I don't think so. Next question. Camila Andrade. And I know that she comes from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
It's another question about time. On the subject of time, we've been going for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? It's a podcast.
They can listen to however much they want.
Yeah, they can pause and come back later.
But can I have another brownie?
Please have another brownie. You need the energy because it's a long podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to pass out.
Camila from Brazil, who is a previous winner of my competition. I launched a competition over a year ago.
Uh-huh.
She won the competition.
What did she have to do?
She had to record a couple of minutes of dialogue, a couple of minutes of talking,
mm-hmm.
In response to one of the episodes of Luke's English Podcast,
mm-hmm.
and she won. People voted for her, and she won the prize, which was a dictionary.
Oh wow! What was the subject of conversation?
Oh goodness me! It's a long time ago now, and I heard so many that I can't remember what they were all about. All I remember is that she just was very impressive and charming and. And so, well done, Camilla, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she said to me, would you rather go back in time and meet your ancestors,
mm-hmm.
or go way into the future and meet your great-grandchildren?
Ooh.
What would you rather do? Who would you rather meet, your ancestors from the past or your grandchildren from the future?
Very interesting question.
Time travel related.
Yeah, there's a theme here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're both interesting.
Yeah.
I would say the future.
Yeah.
I'm very skeptical about the future. I'm very skeptical and very worried about the future. So
I think it's all going to be zombies and...
Yeah, zombies at best. At best,
really?
Going to be zombies. If the world still even exists, if this planet still exists.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in the future, I think it would be very interesting to see if... anything I do has any influence on anything in the future.
Really?
But I'm also very curious. I would also be very curious to know where I'm coming from, what... because, I was pretty close to all my grandparents, and it's fascinating. And to really see the lineage and how much I inherit. So it's hard. It's a really hard question, but I think I would have to say the future.
Yeah?
Yeah. How about you?
I see. That's a very good question, too. See, if I went back into the past...
Yeah,
I'd be worried that if I did something, that it would affect the future. For example, if I sort of, the movie Back to the Future?
I know it very well.
If I went to the past and I met my ancestors,
mm-hmm.
if I sort of said something wrong or, if I, dropped a glass in the kitchen or if I sort of caused something to happen which somehow divided the family.
Yeah.
If I tried to make a joke and no one understood it and they all got offended and then there was a big argument and then my parents for some reason
split up.
Never met each other and then I would just disappear. I wouldn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So I'd be worried about sort of just breaking the space-time continuum.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think even if you just said, hi, I'm your great-great-grandchild, I think that, that would already kind of influence, the, that would kind of screw up everything.
I think it would, wouldn't it? So yeah. I think there's a number of theories about what can happen if you go into the past.
Yeah.
One is that you affect the future, yeah. which then affects who you are in that situation. So, if, for example, I made a mistake or said a bad joke and my parents never got together, mm-hmm. then I would just disappear.
Yeah.
But the other option, the other theory, is that another version, another plane of existence would be created.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it would be all right. You know?
Yeah, because it's just another plane.
Really. Yeah, exactly. so I don't think I would go into the past because I'm scared of what yeah. I would do. So I would like to go to the future.
Yeah. But that would screw things up as well.
Would it?
Wouldn't it?
Would it?
Imagine now, if our great-grandparents decided to come visit us and to see how we are doing. That would...
Well, and for example, if they came back and they looked really ill and really poor,
yeah,
and they was like, "Look, you know, it's really hard in the future. You know, we haven't got any food, we haven't got any money.
Yeah,
you know, we're homeless. What are you doing?" Then I'd feel really guilty, and I'd just
yeah. Or you would be like, "How did you travel in time?" It would open up your mind to a whole other realm.
Yeah, but I would just say I would accept that in the future, at some point, we will be able to travel in time, and obviously we can't do it now, but they could. So I don't know.
But if in the future we can travel in time, we would know that now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would. I think if we got the ability to travel through time, then all of time would just become meaningless, and you know the space-time continuum would break down. It would just become chaos.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not a physicist. I'm not
me neither.
A quantum physicist. I think we need to ask people like, what's his name, Mikio Kaku? I think he's a Japanese-American physicist. He's the sort of guy who can answer these questions. Or Doc Brown, Dr. Emmett
yeah,
Brown.
Yeah, of course.
He would probably...
Which would be the most obvious.
Yeah. But if you did, he would probably just go, Marty! you know, get to the DeLorean! Or something like that. That's what I think. So, yeah, I'd go to the future just so I could get, like, the next iPhone.
Yeah.
And bring it back.
iPhone 25.
Yeah, and yeah. I'd show people, oh, look at this, I've got the iPhone 25. But I don't know how it will be, what the iPhone 25 will be like.
I think it won't be a phone.
No?
I think it would just be like a thing that you attach, like a helmet or like, I don't know, an earpiece. Or.
I don't think it'll be as big as a helmet. I think it
no.
could just be...
Yeah, probably.
Like, it'll probably just be like a little tablet that you swallow.
Yeah.
And you just swallow it once, and then you
and
just...
a beam comes out of your nose, and you can touch the screen, which, like, is a projection coming yeah, out of your nose.
Exactly. You can send laser beams out yeah. of your face, which yep. Allow you to, like, visit websites.
Yeah. And, like, have your agenda in front of you.
Yeah, you yep. can just like things.
Yeah, you can like things.
You just be able to like things more conveniently. Okay. So, I hope again, hope that answers your question, Camilla. Let's move on. Wasim... And Wasim, I know, is he's a clairvoyant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He lives in New Zealand. He's mm-hmm. originally from Iran. Interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Wasim is interested in your spiritual beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any? Do you have a spiritual belief? Do you believe in life after death? What's your spirituality, Sebastian?
I do not adhere to any religion.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, but I do consider myself a spiritual person.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what exactly I believe in. I think I'm discovering that more and more every day. I do believe that there is a sort of intelligence, but I don't necessarily think that intelligence is not us, in the sense that I think we are... utilizing a very small percentage of our capacity, and I do think that we are deities in our own way.
We're like gods.
We are, and I think we don't realize it. As if we're kind of spiritual, we have a creative power that we're not aware of and that we don't utilize or that we're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in human potential. I don't know if that is spiritual or not. I believe it is spiritual, and I do believe that we are linked as living beings on this earth.
Yeah. Well, but Facebook, you know.
Facebook is, that's what the clearest example of MySpace.
I'm joking, of course. I'm being facetious, as usual. I agree. I think that we do have a hell of a lot of untapped potential, and we're probably learning more and more as time goes on. I don't know if I would, from speaking for myself, I don't know if I would call it spirituality, you see. Like, I think that our subconscious, or the way that our minds work, it's kind of a mystery to us.
It's a very big mystery. Yeah. I mean, I believe in dreams, if I can say so. I mean, it says there's nothing to believe in. It's just they're there. I mean, we have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
We have so little information about it. That's what I'm trying to say, that we are barely scratching the surface on what we are. And I think the miracle is look at us. I mean, we're an incredibly complex being.
Yeah.
We're inventing complicated computers just to mimic.
But also, there are some things which people, understand, people understand as spiritual phenomena, mm-hmm. let's say, or supernatural things, which may be explained by other things, you know, like the fact that maybe sometimes certain close friends or brothers or sisters, when they're separate from each other, they feel a connection,
mm-hmm.
and one of them decides to call the other one on the telephone.
Yeah.
And at that moment, the other one picks up his telephone, and then the call arrives.
Synchronicity.
Mm-hmm. And they then conclude that they have some spiritual link.
Yeah.
But it could just be explained by something else that we don't really have the language or the... We can't really explain that right now, but it might not be that it's sort of some supernatural force, like some kind of extra sensory force. It could just be that since they are apart, naturally they're going to think about each other, and sometimes when they both think about each other at the same time, one of them calls the other one.
Yeah.
So it's not that unbelievable. It's quite reasonable actually that would happen.
I think that's, it always seems like it's the fine line between miracle and something very banal, you know. These kinds of phenomena. I think it depends on a lot on how you want to take it.
Yeah.
You can see life as a series of miracles and strange phenomenon, and you wouldn't be wrong. And you can see them as just a sequence of events, and you wouldn't be wrong either. I think a lot has to do with your perspective. And I think that that's what I'm saying, that we create our worlds. I think that you can see the magic moment, the magic in the moments, or not.
Yeah, it depends on how you understand things that happen. For example, you might see that the birth of a child, and you'll say, "Oh my God, it's a miracle!" And then another person would see the birth of a child and say, "Well, it's not really a miracle; it's science.
It's science.
You know, that's what the body does, and we know how it does it." Yes,
but isn't that a miracle? Like, science sometimes is just an explanation of the miracle.
Yeah, they don't really explain why these things happen.
They explain how a child is born, but they can't explain really how the driving force behind it either.
Yeah.
It can go on for hours.
We could keep talking about this. Life after death. Well, we don't really know, do we?
Oh, no, we don't. Do I believe? I have no idea. Of course, I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
Do I think? Do I feel? I think there's something, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Much more.
Okay. All right. So, Wasim, I hope you like that rather vague answer.
Very, very, very vague.
Okay, next question is from... now, I don't know how to pronounce your name. Hai Tuan. Hai Tuan, I think. But Hai Tuan says, as an American, which accent do you think is the most easy to understand? And this is a difficult question.
Within the United States?
No, the question continues, British, Australian, South American, or Asian English? Do you find that there's one accent that's easier to understand than others?
Well, it's hard to say because I'm not objective. An American accent is easiest for me to understand because I'm American. Out of those that were listed...
Surely it's just the accents that you're most familiar
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, but I would say between an Australian and a British, but also like British, there are several, you know, like a Cockney accent I wouldn't understand.
If you meet someone, if you meet someone from Scotland, Glasgow, working class guy from Glasgow, it might be very difficult to understand because they're using a dialect.
I would need subtitles.
Yeah, yeah.
Scottish films, I often need subtitles.
Trainspotting,
for example.
Yeah, I personally, if I can answer this question,
yeah,
I would say it really depends on the kind of accent that you're most familiar
with. Of course.
So if you've never ever heard an accent from Edinburgh, then it might seem very strange and difficult to understand. But if you grew up in Edinburgh and that's the accent that you listen to since you were a baby, then that's going to be the easiest one. So for learners of English, maybe I would say there is no one accent which is easier or less easy to understand. It all depends on how familiar you are with those accents. So for learners of English, what you need to do is you need to try and expose yourself to as many different accents in English as possible so that they are less foreign to you,
yeah,
I would say. So let's move on. Stefano says, hi, Luke. He would like to find out from you about the bomb blast which happened in Boston,
yep,
on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So... in fact, there's another question about that from Kazan Anna, who is from Russia. And she said, first, I would like him to accept my deep condolence in connection with the terrorist action in Boston,
mm-hmm,
if it is a terrorist action.
Yeah, well, do we know anything more? I don't, because I saw it when it, you know, I was watching the news that night, but I haven't...
I don't think we do know any more, except that some politicians in America have described it as a terrorist action.
Okay.
CNN described it as a terror attack.
Okay.
We don't really know who.
And
did
how
it.
Many dead finally?
I think it's three.
Okay.
But we don't really know more about who did it. But what do you think about this, Sebastian?
What do I think about? I don't think we know enough, I guess. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know. I think if it was an act of terrorism, quote unquote, I don't understand. I don't think it was very effective, honestly.
I didn't do a good job.
I mean, in the sense that it's... I think if you wanted to kill the maximum amount of people, that they didn't really do their job. I don't know.
Thank goodness.
I spent 5 years in Boston. I love the city. And I think it's, of course, like any... You know, if it was an intentional act, I think it's, you know, of course, a terrible...
Mm.
Act. I don't, you know, don't understand the meaning or why someone would do that.
Yeah.
And besides that, I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it happened, and definitely condolences to the people who were injured or lost their lives in it.
Very sad.
Yeah.
We can't really say much more about it because we don't know exactly who was responsible or how it came about. But all we can say is that it's very tragic, of course.
And a very unfortunate event. It's
absolutely. Just like any other attack in any situation.
On civilians.
Yeah, exactly. It's all very tragic. I mean, we'll find out more as we know from the news. Let's see. I've got... more questions, Sebastian, is that all right?
Yes, I have to go in about 10 minutes. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Kunate Tiriaki, I think that's how I say his name.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's asked about differences between Europe and the US, and I think we've talked a little bit about that. Christina Ricciardo would like to know about American junk food and obesity problems.
Ooh, yes, uh-huh.
What do you think about that? People say that Americans are really fat.
Yes.
Because they eat hamburgers all the time.
Yes, it's not only the hamburgers, it's everything. Okay, let's put it this way. First of all, the United States, once again, is a very big place. You got people really who have very different eating habits, whether, you know, you find someone in a big city, which big city, which state, and even within one city, you have people who eat, you know, very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, especially in major cities in the United States, you can really get anything you want. So you have the choice to eat healthy or not.
Mm.
We are constantly bombarded by food. in the sense advertisement for food or the capacity to get it in the United States.
Very convenient.
Very convenient. And so there is a big tendency to overeat. So it's a mix of things. The American diet is not necessarily that healthy because, first of all, there's lots of... First of all, the quantities are very big. Mm. If you go to a restaurant, usually... The platters are more than what is healthy to eat. That's why there's a whole culture of doggy bags, which is the little package that you can ask for to bring home half of your meal. Which is regularly practiced over there because the portions are so big. So I think it's also a question of quantity. I think it's also the quality of lots of the food is very processed.
Yeah,
lots of heavily processed foods.
So is it a welcome change to be in France?
Yes. Does
it
feel like food-wise, I mean, there are few countries, I think, where you eat as good as you do in France.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as freshness of food and variety, it's a very pretty varied cuisine.
Except for Britain. I mean, obviously, English food is, I think, no one can argue that English food is not the best. What I'm saying is, of course, British food is number one, then French food, then, other countries. But we all know, I mean, everyone denies it, but we all know that English food is clearly the best food in the world.
Yeah.
I think no one can argue against that.
There was an interview with John Cleese from Monty Python, and he had a great comeback.
John Cleese.
And it was on the Daily Show, but like this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the guy asked, "Why does British food suck?" Mm-hmm. And he responded, "Well, because we had an empire to run."
Yeah, we were too busy taking over the world
to focus on cuisine.
And then we just took everyone else's food.
Yeah, well, one thing to say about American food is that American food is also very varied as well, in the sense that what is becoming more and more the definition of American food is international.
Yeah.
If you go to a city like New York, a typical New Yorker will eat Thai for lunch and then Mexican for dinner and really go all over the world within a week, culinarily speaking. So, of course, there are American typical dishes, but... Yeah.
It's not simple. It's not simple, ladies and gentlemen.
No, complicated.
Can't just say American food anymore.
No.
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
I think that's
complex.
I'm going to call this episode A Cup of Tea with Sebastian Marx, but it could easily be called It's Complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated.
right, I'm sorry. I've got to just ask you a couple of other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Hannai Georgette Burton asks, once again, are you sure you're the man on the flyer? Now, does this make sense to you?
Yes. Is this person has seen my show?
I think this person has seen your show.
Yes, I am the person on the flyer. I usually wear glasses, and on my flyer, I do not have glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flyer, it was the person took the photo of me when I was in the middle of laughing. It was a pretty good, hearty laugh.
Yeah.
So,
that's a hearty laugh.
Yeah. And I was really cracking up. And so you might not see that face often in real life.
People ask you, is that you on the flyer?
Yes, often.
Okay. So, Hannai, there you go. Hope that answers your question. She's nice, Hannai. I met her. She came to the French Fried Comedy Night.
Ah, okay.
She was sort of shy. It was very sweet.
Yeah, I don't think she introduced herself to me, did she?
I don't know.
Maybe.
She introduced herself to me, Sebastian, because I'm Luke from Luke's English Podcast.
I see. So she's shy, but up to a certain point.
Exactly. Yeah. She's she managed to overcome her shyness to ask
Luke's famous podcast.
Exactly.
Host of Luke's famous podcast. Question.
Hiroshi, I've just got. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got two more things.
Yeah.
If everyone has got the time, including the listeners, I might divide this podcast into two episodes.
You do whatever you want.
We will see. Hiroshi Maruyama comes back with a second question,
mm-hmm.
and he says, "Ask him his favourite sport. I like disc golf, rollerblading and salsa dancing. I don't think dancing is a sport, but that's fine. Does he do any of them? Is disc golf popular among US people? I think it's an excellent sport." I know what you're thinking, Sebastian. You're thinking, what is disc golf?
Yes.
I don't know what disc golf is either.
Disc golf.
Can you imagine? Have you ever heard of disc golf?
No, I imagine golfing like with plates, but...
Well, it's here on the internet. It's on Wikipedia. Yeah. Wikipedia says...
Are there some images?
Yeah, there you go. It looks like it's an American sport.
Uh-huh.
It must be an American sport. It says,
oh, okay, it's kind of like throwing a frisbee into a basket.
It's like basketball, but with a frisbee.
But it seems more like golf in the sense that it's not like basketball in the sense that their team seems like there are holes, if you know, baskets that you have to throw the frisbee into, I guess.
It's like playing golf, but with a frisbee.
Yeah.
And you throw the frisbee into a basket.
Instead of putting a ball in a hole, you put the frisbee in a basket, I guess.
And I expect you can't walk with the frisbee.
I guess that would kind of defeat the purpose.
Sounds good.
I'd like to play it.
I love frisbee.
I have never seen a disc golf course, but...
Yeah.
So disc golf, I do enjoy dancing salsa. It's not a sport. I don't think we can consider dancing a sport unless it's, I guess, for competition. So you can do that. But yeah, I do enjoy dancing. I took salsa classes and lots of fun. Mm. Really lots of fun.
Okay.
Don't play any much sports right now. I played baseball when I was young.
Yeah.
Baseball, American football,
soccer.
Little League and all, I wasn't too short for basketball.
Okay, good. Final point, Sebastian. This is the last question from Flavio, who says, I would like to hear him try to pronounce a few words in British English.
Oh, dear.
And he's listed some words, all right?
Yes.
So the first word is water. So how would you say it normally?
Water. Well, like how it's hard because now if I got the pressure and I know I'm supposed to be.
Well, let's do it like this.
Water.
I will say say it in the your normal accent
water.
And then say it like a British person.
Water.
Yeah.
Water.
All right. Water.
Water.
Pretty good.
Water.
Pretty good. Yeah. Can I?
Can I have a glass of water?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Not bad. Yeah. The t sound. All right. Let's have another one. The next word is territory.
Territory.
Or actually, I would say territory.
Mm. Territory.
Yeah.
Territory.
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 Now
what am I missing?
What are you doing there?
Territory.
So not territory, not a question, but territory.
Territory.
Yeah, okay.
Territory.
So this is British territory.
This is British territory.
All right.
Not bad.
Not bad, Sebastian. Yeah. Thought.
Thought.
Yeah, thought.
Thought. There I just think of like... Darth Vader for them. Thought.
Really?
The thought.
That's the force,
the
thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
The force.
Thought.
Now, that Darth thought. Vader would be like,
oh, I was thinking about your birthday.
Now, what's that joke?
The thought.
Yeah,
and I had a thought.
A thought.
I know what you're getting for your birthday, Sebastian. I felt your presence.
Okay, so thought. Advertisement.
Advertisement.
All right, now in
advertisement.
In America, you'd say what?
Advertisement.
Advertisement.
Or commercial.
advertisement.
Advertisement.
All right, okay.
Advertisement. Advertisement.
Yeah.
Advertisement.
Pretty good, yeah. Look at that advertisement. Look at that advertisement.
Look at that advertisement. I can't do it without going into a cliche.
It's fine. And finally, I can't eat eggs.
I can't eat eggs.
Yeah, that's good.
I can't.
I just can't.
I just can't eat eggs.
I hate eggs.
I hate eggs.
Very good. And in the American accent?
I hate eggs.
Yeah. Do you really?
I love them.
Me too. I love eggs as well. Well, Sebastian, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with me.
Pleasure's all mine. Delicious. I ate two brownies.
It's fine. It's great.
I'm eating like an American now.
Go ahead. Do you want another
one? I spent 9 years trying to break the habits. And now here at Luke's English Podcast, I fall back in.
I like to treat my guests well by providing them with snacks and beverages.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you enjoyed the brownies.
Thank you.
Have another one if you like.
Oh, no. I've already had two and... I have a line. I have to now dance 45 minutes of salsa.
Yeah.
in order to make up for.
Just to burn off the calories.
Minimum.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sebastian. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in finding out about Sebastian's shows, which if you're in the area you should be interested in, you can check out his website, which will be printed on my website, SebastianMarks.com.
SebMarks.com.
SebMarks.com.
S-E-B-M-A-R-X.
.com.
.com.
Right. I hope to have you back at some point, Sebastian.
With pleasure.
Great. Sebastian also has a podcast in French.
Yes.
If you're interested.
It's called Donc Voilà Quoi.
Donc Voilà Quoi, which is like saying, so there you go.
Yeah. Pretty much means nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like, so there you go.
So there you go.
Donc Voilà Quoi.
Yeah.
Okay. How's my French?
Wonderful.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Non, ce n'est pas vrai.
No, you got your... Well, because I think you're very accent conscious.
Yeah.
I think within a year you'll have a better French accent than I do.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't pay any attention to it, and so that's why.
Oui, c'est très important pour moi.
Yeah.
Oui. This is not Luke's French podcast. I just wanted to...
Not yet.
Not yet. Maybe there will be another one, but I think I'm going to stick to the English one for the moment. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. What I normally do at the end is I kind of go, bye, like a sort of echo kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Do you want to join me with a bye? Thank you very much again for listening to the podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com. If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.